Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome. This is Beyond the Darkness, and this is a special episode of True Crime Tuesday Revisited. Throughout the month of October, we're revisiting some of our very favorite true crime stories over the past 12 years of our show. Tonight's show is very unique. As a matter of fact, it might go down as the very first true crime show we ever did. We discuss this evening the murder of John Lennon with a woman who had a very personal and friendly relationship with Mark David Chapman. She's also joined by Chip Coffee, the psychic and sensitive. This was from around 2007 and is by far one of our favorite episodes. Although not truly a True Crime Tuesday episode, we thought that because of the weirdness, the strange nature of this, and the fact that it does, in fact, end in a true crime with the death of John Lennon, you might have an interest in this, especially in the month of October. Possessed or insane, we'll leave that up to you to decide in tonight's special edition of Beyond the Darkness, True Crime Tuesday Revisited. And remember, you never have to miss another minute of the best in True Crime Talk Radio. Subscribe to True Crime Tuesday, and everybody that subscribes between now and November 22nd is immediately entered into a drawing. On November 22nd, Tim and I will be doing a drawing. We'll be giving away 3 one-year subscriptions to our show. And remember, when you subscribe, it's only $5 a month. You can end your subscription anytime if you find the show is not for you. Not only do you get at least 4 brand new 90 to 120-minute episodes every month, you also get access to all of our past archives. So sign up now by going to darknessradio.com and click on the True Crime Tuesday banner. You can subscribe or you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll send you the link so you never have to miss another minute of the best in True Crime Talk Radio.
I'd like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
This evening, our topic swings to an article that's a cover story of Haunted Times magazine, as we alluded earlier. We've got with us the author of that article, Mr. Chip Coffee. Good evening, Chip.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you very much for joining us here this evening and talking to us about this. This is an amazing topic, and I know people are buzzing talking about the idea of that there's more to the death of John Lennon than maybe just a nut that took his obsession a little too far.
Yeah, the article's created quite a stir.
What do you, first of all, let's kind of prime the pump here a little bit. How did you even find a connection to this? How did the world open up to Chip Coffee about this possible possession?
Several years ago, I had the distinct pleasure of meeting a lady here in the Atlanta area that, for privacy purposes, we are calling Maria. Not her real name, but she chooses to go by that name for purposes in dealing with the general public. So I met Maria, and in the course of conversations, I found out from her that she had been a friend of Mark David Chapman, the man who killed John Lennon. And she told me a fantastic story that it was really, really hard for me to believe at the time of all the connections that she had with him. But the more she told it to me, it sort of stretched my belief system to a degree. And the more I started to delve into it, and the fact that she lived in a house that was infested by something negative, and that he had been a friend of hers, and then the stories that she told me, that's kind of the backup story of what happened. And in the course of events, it took a lot of convincing of to get Maria to allow me to actually write the article, because she wanted no press or no publicity about the story, even 2.5, almost 3 decades later. But finally, she gave me permission to write it, and thus the story came about.
All right. So when you heard this, though, now, were you a fan of John Lennon yourself growing up, Chip?
I liked the Beatles in their earlier days. As the time progressed and they really started to move into some really different and obtuse sort of things, I sort of lost interest in the Beatles, to be honest with you.
Okay. So as they kind of progressed into more of the hippie movement, there just wasn't as much interest for you, huh?
Well, I was a poor little Southern boy, so.
I guess. Now, you had mentioned Maria's involvement with this. So you began. Now, what inspired you to bring this article out at this point?
I think that it was a curious thing to look at, that there could be some sort of paranormal connection to what happened with this case, with Mark Chapman, with John Lennon. And it was a very interesting story to me, and I felt that other people would find it equally as interesting to figure. Those who are interested in the possibility of paranormal events or demonic events would find this extremely compelling. And even the mainstream public might, you know, things that make us go, they may stop and take a look at this.
Right. Well, now, we have Maria on the line with us. Is that correct, Chip?
We do.
Maria, welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, I appreciate you spending the time with us this evening and sharing your story. Now, let's start back. This goes back before your connection or friendship with Mark David Chapman. You believe that you lived in a haunted house. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What led you to the belief that your house was haunted to begin with?
Our daughter, apparently something was trying to attach itself to her, and she was having extremely horrible nightmares and acting very suspiciously every single night at the same time. And we, of course, we went through all the doctors and did everything you do for your child, but nothing helped. We went through the church, we asked for help, and she continued to be just hysterical pretty much all the time. The doctors put her on large doses of Dilantin and Phenobarb to try to calm her down, which actually just turned her into somewhat of a zombie.
Wow, I guess.
And so she was just not doing well in school, and we were all quite miserable. But I could tell you individual things that happened that made us realize what was going on, but I'd be on the phone all night.
Okay. Well, let's start off real quickly. Now, what year was this that you started realizing that your house was haunted?
Let me see. She was 6 years old, 1971.
Okay. So it was around 1971.
Mm-hmm, around that. I have to do math in my head, which isn't good.
Sure. Well, it's better than Tim and I. We have to kick off our shoes and socks just to be able to count all the way up to 20.
So, I understand.
All right, so it was around 1971 when this began. Now, was this house, did you purchase this house and move in, or was it just all of a sudden it started in 1971? Can you bring us up to date a little bit on that?
It started about 2 weeks after we moved into the house.
All right.
I had asked my daughter, Kathy, to I was going to lie down and take a nap, had all these boxes all over the house, and asked her if she'd take care of her little brother.
Mm-hmm.
She said yes, and I lay down to go to sleep, and when I woke up, she was standing over me with the bathroom scales, and she dropped them on my face.
Wow.
That was the first thing that happened, and that was so out of character for her, and she didn't ever remember doing it.
Okay.
So we knew we had a problem. Right then, of course, we thought it was more of a neurological...
like a sleepwalking type problem? Is that what you were considering? Okay.
Yes, that's what we were thinking, but it just got more intense and more intense. And
now, you said that it always continued or began around 11 p.m. every night, correct?
Every night, mm-hmm.
Was she asleep at that time? Would it wake her up? Would it be just that that's around the time that she'd go to bed? You know, help us understand that a little more.
Well, no, she went to bed earlier, and she appeared to be asleep, but she never remembered.
Was she ever a part of any sleep studies? to
no,
test?
No, she wasn't. Okay. Perhaps they didn't do it so much at that time.
Right.
She did see two neurologists, and I would think that they would have been the one to conduct a sleep study.
Sure.
If they were doing them. But, yes, it was 11 o'clock every night, and she would just be babbling about this man standing behind me and screaming and cursing. You'd swear she'd been around a sailor.
Hmm. That's strange. Well, yeah, so one of the medications they had her on was Dilantin, and isn't that a medication that they usually give for seizures?
That's right.
So did they think that maybe there was something like a seizure-like activity going on the brain that was causing this to happen?
That's what they thought.
Okay.
They thought she had psychomotor epilepsy.
Okay.
And which did they have the petit mal seizures. But she never, as far as I know, she never had a seizure.
All right.
And I had never heard of psychomotor epilepsy.
Now, it seems in medicine there's always some kind of crazy big name for something little going on, right?
Well, I wondered if they had just named the particular illness as we went.
That's right.
But anyway, they gave her Dilantin, and it just made her just almost catatonic.
Now, did you see that was actually helping, though? Was it taking away the night terrors or the problems that were occurring at 11 o'clock?
It would for a little while.
Okay.
And then it would start again. And we left that house to go to New York, and she was amazingly, she did beautifully in New York.
Oh, so the minute you took her out of that area and that house, the problems all seemed to fade away.
It did. And, you know, moving a child from the South to New York, you would think would be real catastrophic.
Right.
But she did beautifully, and she had none of these episodes, that's what we call them because we didn't know what else to call them, while she was in New York.
Okay.
Not a one.
Now, when you were there, how long did you live in this home?
7 years.
Okay, so you were in this home for 7 years with this activity going on. Now, had it affected any of the rest of you? Were any of the rest of you sensing anything in this home malevolent or evil aside from the actions of your daughter?
Well, my son was also, he was 3 years younger than Kathy, and he was terrified. He would tell me that he'd wake up in the middle of the night, and she'd be standing over him with this this frightening little smile on her face.
Okay.
And one night, I didn't sleep well, and I heard her moving around, so I got up, and she had a pillow over his face.
Oh, my.
So we changed doctors once again, and more medication, and we never did seem to find that correct combination of drugs to keep her level.
Okay, those were still surrounding her. I mean, did any of the rest of you ever feel a cold grasp or hear a voice or strange knockings in the wall, anything else to lead you to believe that there was anything else going on in the house aside from what was happening to your daughter?
Well, I smell cologne a lot, and I have seen objects move on my server from one end to the other and then off onto the floor. Books came off bookshelves.
All right, so there was definitely some other haunting stuff going on.
Not just her. And there were so many people who came into the house one time and refused to ever come back in it again.
Hmm.
Well, although nothing happened to them. It was just that feeling.
Right. Chip, let me ask you real quickly. Now, being involved in the paranormal and a paranormal investigator, now, we come into this little girl's life at around the age of 7, and for 7 years, which seemed to be during the teen angst years and coming into puberty and hormones, isn't that what's usually equated with poltergeist activity that surround young girls like that?
Lots of times it is. You're absolutely correct. It's one of those things that seems to, a lot of that sort of activity seems to center around children.
And now at the age of 14, when they move out to New York, everything seems to subside. Do you get a feel, as a psychic and a medium yourself, do you get a feel that, you know, some of it may have been from her own angst, her own energies that were kind of throwing out there and causing all of this insanity to go on around them.
Well, first of all, let me back up for a second and tell you that the year, Maria, you moved into the house in 1971, correct?
That's right.
The family actually moved away from the house for a year and then returned to the house.
Okay.
So that's the way it happened. They moved away from the house to New York in 1976. So they were away during the time that Kathy was, if we do the math, she was about 8 or 9 years old at that time, and then came back within a year after they left to go to New York. And when they returned to the house, and we can talk about that later, when they came back to the house, all hell really broke loose when they came back from New York.
But for that 1 year window that you were away from the house, there was no problem with Kathy.
She was completely clear.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. All right.
Very interesting. But to answer your question that you ask about that, it is very common for those things to start to come into a child's life. Now, what's the cause and what's the effect is what I would look at. You know, is she a more vulnerable target at that point in time? Do the hormonal changes going on in children or whatever goes on inside their own bodies, their own angst, their own changes, does that ramp up the activity? Is one thing feeding off of another?
Right. Well, yeah, that would lead you to believe. I mean, that's just strange that was going on. But, you know, again, if we were able to move out of that house for a year. Now, Maria, was there ever any research done or did you ever speak to the people that owned the house prior to you to see if they ever had any kind of problems or challenges in the home?
No, we never did. They had moved away and we were unable to find them.
Okay.
I have talked to the people who bought the house from us.
Right.
And the male owner said, no, nothing had happened, nothing at all. But his wife at the same time is saying, well, what about when? And he was just saying, no, nothing's happened here.
Okay. But nothing to the levels, at least, that you guys were going through, none of the terror or the insanity that was kind of going on for you guys at all.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they wouldn't be hiding it if that was the case. But again, yeah, I guess it could be wrong. Some men are too proud to admit that there's anything freaky going on and they want to keep control of their house, I guess. So.
But one of the children, there's an interesting story about what one of the children actually told Maria.
And what was that?
That moved into the house after she lived there.
Okay. And Maria, what was that story?
Well, this child was the same age as my daughter.
Okay.
And they went to work with me one Saturday. And I asked her, I said, how do you like our house? And she said, well, I like it okay, but I went around the corner of the stairs, and there was an old man standing there.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what did you do? And she said, well, I just kind of stood there frozen, and then I ran. And she went to her teacher that day at school and told the teacher what had happened, and the teacher told her if it happened again just to tell him to go away.
Right.
And that's, Cindy saw this old man. Often she would see him looking through her window, and she was on the second floor.
Oh, geez. Now, your daughter saw this as well? Saw this old man?
Yes, she did.
Okay. And did she feel he was the man that was frightening her all the time at 11 o'clock? Was he? And if so, what was she saying he was doing?
Well, she didn't remember the 11 o'clock terrors.
Okay.
After we left the house completely, it started coming back to her. But while we lived in the house, she didn't know. She'd wake up in the morning and be exhausted, but she would have no idea what had gone on during the night.
But she did have memories of this man at other times?
Uh-huh. She would remember that there was an old man, but not until we moved.
Okay.
Except when it was happening. And then she would be screaming and crying and cursing, and she'd say, Mom, there's an old man standing right behind you.
How did that make you feel? Did you think your daughter was just overly imaginative or nuts, or how did that strike you at first?
Well, at first, I just thought she was having the night terrors.
Okay.
Just like you say, maybe poltergeist activities, and I began corresponding with a doctor, Dr. Roll, at Duke University, and he helped me a lot understand what was going on from a psychical point of view. After so many doctors, I finally decided decided that it really was not something physical.
Right. Okay. Well, did you, were you fearful for your own safety when you started seeing things move around the house yourself?
Not really. I was so worried about the children. I really, no, I never was.
Okay.
I didn't think about myself too much.
All right. Well, that's good. I guess, I mean, as long as you were that much in control. Now, you said that you went to the clergy and you went for help. Did you have blessings done on the house? Did you have exorcisms done on the house at all? What all did it entail of what you reached out for help?
We had a Catholic priest come to the house and bless it one day when she was at school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to put her through anything as traumatic as an exorcism. Well, my husband would never have agreed to it anyway.
Okay.
But he blessed the house, and he left her a cross. And she came in from school, and she said, "Oh, what is this?" And I said, "A very special friend brought it to you." And she immediately got a hammer and a nail, and she nailed it over the door to her bedroom.
Okay.
And that was unusual because we're not particularly religious people.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to take that and that very minute, and hang it up was quite interesting. She felt very safe with it.
And did that help stave things off for a while as well?
No, that really didn't.
Did it seem to inspire the evil spirits or the dark spirits or malevolent spirits, whatever you want to call them? Did it incite them or get them a little bit more riled up after this blessing happened?
I honestly don't remember. I don't think so.
All right. Well, now, probably a lot of people are wondering at this point, well, what does your haunted house have to do with the death of John Lennon? So let's start off now bringing us into this a little bit, Maria. You you came into knowing Mark David Chapman in what year?
72.
Okay.
1972. He was the youth counselor at the YMCA camp during the summer, and both of my children went there. And he took a particular liking to Kathy and taught her to swim and did archery and all the type of things that she had an eye-hand coordination problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't think, well, we were told by the doctor that she would never be able to catch a ball, ride a bike, but Mark taught her to do all those things. So, of course, we were very fond of him.
Right.
And he began spending a lot of time with the family, almost becoming part of the family. And that's how we met him, and how he came to be at the house quite a bit.
So he started with your family in 72, getting to know them. At what point did he become integrated into your family as such a close friend?
Almost immediately.
Okay. Well, sure, I would say as a parent, as soon as you start seeing results. Now, I just have to ask this as a parent myself. And in this day and age, were there any concerns about the relationship between your daughter and this older boy?
No, there were not.
Okay.
For the most part, they were only together when I was there. There were a few times that he was with her alone, but I never had any problem. Never even occurred to me that he would do anything.
Okay. All right, so there was no fear of
Molestation
or any problems. Okay. And again, I apologize. I don't mean to be crude with it. I just am curious because I know a lot of people that are listening are probably feeling and wondering the same questions that we're dealing with as well. So,
I think if it were now, I would be much more concerned. But at that time, it didn't seem to be so prevalent. And we thought so much of him. It never occurred to me that he might do something like that.
Now, do you notice at this point, any correlation with things starting to progress at your home, getting more problematic as Mark David Chapman becomes a friend of the family, or was it pretty much just the same attacks at all times?
It was pretty much the same, and I never talked to him about it. That was mainly because my husband kept telling me, there is a reason for this. There is a logical reason if we just find it. And I never brought it up. I never brought it up to anyone. So, no, it didn't increase until after we came back from New York.
Okay.
And then it was much worse.
For those of you that are just tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town, our guest this evening is Chip Coffee. He's a psychic. He's a medium. He's also the author of an article in Haunted Times magazine about the death of John Lennon and the tie-in that perhaps John Lennon's murderer, Mark David Chapman, was possessed by a demon. And Maria Simpson is a friend of Chip's here, and she's on with us. And she actually has, as we've just mentioned, a tie with Mark David Chapman. Her daughter, who was a special needs child at the time for coordination, was going to the Y, and Mark David Chapman was one of the youth counselors who took time with her, taught her how to throw, how to do a lot of things that doctors said she would not be able to do. So he integrated himself into your life and into your family and into your friendship. And at no time you ever, you know, there's just some people you get a feeling that are just off, Maria. Did you ever get a feeling around Mark that he was not all there?
Not until he moved to Hawaii. And then came back for a visit. Then we saw a radical change in him. But prior to that, when he was having dinner with us and we were canning beans together and that sort of thing, the only thing I knew was that he was basically a sad person. He was depressed and didn't quite know what to do with his life. But that's not unusual for a young man.
Well, now, in 1972... how interested in the Beatles and John Lennon was Mark David Chapman at that point?
Oh, he was just he was obsessed with them. He absolutely loved them, and he had their tapes in the car. And if we rode anywhere with him, we listened to the Beatles.
Okay, but did you feel that there was any more insanity in that as any other teenager of the time over rock and roll music?
I don't think so. I remember the same hysteria with Elvis.
Right.
Know?
All right. So now he's into your life for a couple of years, and then you said you lived in that house for about 4 years, then moved out for 1 year?
Yes, that's right.
Now, when you moved out of the house, were you still in contact with Mark Chapman, or had it already started to fall apart, or not fall apart, but had the separation begun already?
No, we talked on the phone during that time, and he was doing some... volunteer help with Vietnamese children and finding them homes.
And where was he located at this point?
He was up in the north somewhere. I really have forgotten.
Okay, so at what point did he move away? Did he move before you moved to New York?
He moved while we were in New York.
Okay, and then you're gone for a year. Mm-hmm. You come back to this haunted home. What would possess you to come back and bring your family back into a home when you've taken them out for a year and it's been a successful year without the attacks on your daughter and the craziness of the home that you were in? Why would you bring them back?
There again, my husband just said, "Oh, it's nothing."
Okay.
I couldn't convince him there was something going on.
Well, Maria, you know well enough that men never listen.
I'm sorry?
I said, you know well enough that men never listen, right?
Isn't that the way that it usually goes with these cases, that the women and the kids are the ones that typically in cases that have this sort of activity, the women and the children are going, yeah, there's something going on, and the men are going, nah, there's nothing going on.
Yeah,
that's right. You know, it's just something we haven't found the answer to yet.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to move when we came back. But he was not ready. So when we did finally leave, then everything's been fine since.
Great.
And he has to question it now.
Sure. Well, now you moved out for the year. You came back to the home. Now, did Mark Chapman come back into your life? I mean, did he move back down? Because you were in Georgia at the time, correct?
Right, yes.
Did he move back to Georgia again?
Yes, he came back home. I don't think he was able to handle the emotional upheaval that these children were going through. And he was just he was so gentle and so sympathetic with everybody and everything that he just couldn't handle the emotional impact.
Okay. So now let's start to escalate the story a little bit. Now, was he spending nights at all at your home?
He has spent nights with us.
Was he there to witness the attacks or the, Chip, do we call them attacks that were going on to her daughter, or was it just the activity around her daughter?
I think Maria uses a great word, and that's episodes.
Okay.
Nothing happened when he was there.
Really?
Yeah, nothing happened. And I never told him that things were different when he wasn't there.
Was he aware of the idea that you thought the house was haunted?
No, he was not.
Okay. So, Chip, I'm curious at this point. Now, this girl feels some kind of kinship and security with this man, Mark Chapman.
Right.
And he has gone out of his way to help her. He's definitely getting through. He's helping her do things that doctors say she would not be able to do. And when he stays there for the night, there are no episodes.
Very curious.
Does this, in your professional opinion as a paranormal investigator and as a medium and psychic, what type of correlation do you see with this?
I don't know that I really, this is the first time that question's ever been asked, so bravo to you for asking that question, because it never even occurred to me to explore it to that level, to ask if Mark had stayed overnight in the house. It never occurred to me to ask that question, and hearing that information certainly makes me have one of those moments to find that information possibly relevant, possibly, and at best, very curious for the fact that while he was in the house, nothing occurred.
Now, did he have a strong religious background? Do you know, Maria?
He became very religious when he was in his teens.
So while you knew him, he was in his religious state?
Yes, he was.
So I wonder if maybe you said that your family wasn't necessarily religious, correct?
Right.
So what... Maybe he was bringing in some form of protection in his own enlightenment or connection with whatever God he believed in, Chip. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Actually, from what I understand, he attended at sort of an evangelical, almost a tent meeting style revival, and that while he was there, the minister was doing, you know, baptisms or savings or something, and Mark became very, very active with the church and his belief in Jesus. He became what at that time was called a Jesus freak.
Okay. All right. So, well then, yeah, I mean, that begs the thought that then if maybe something was that evil and this man was so compassionate at the time that there was, he brought in some form of protection, maybe not just for himself, but for the entire home. Now, isn't that kind of a strange dichotomy too? You know, all we've known of this man is that he was a cold-hearted killer who, you know, gunned down one of our rock music icons and legends, and, you know, was caught just standing there with a copy of Catcher in the Rye in his hand and an autographed copy of the Double Fantasy album, wasn't it? It's so strange to think that this guy came from maybe a more enlightened stage at some point.
He really, from that perspective, I see where you're going with that, but one of the things that you have to understand is that throughout all this, Mark continued to be very, very troubled and was searching for answers. And even during this time period, Mark suffered from psychological, psychiatric problems from the standpoint that he always had this group of what he calls his little people around him. He was very obsessive compulsive with that whole thing. He was like the Lord God and master of this group of little people that supposedly resided in the walls of his family's home. He had a troubled childhood, with troubles with his father and a father who was abusive to him and his mother. His obsession went to the Beatles. His obsession went to the whole idea of the book The Catcher in the Rye. So Mark had a lot of deep-seated psychological problems at the same time, and in his search for answers, I guess that begs the question, was that enough to really protect him or save him? Because in the long run, his belief system wasn't evidently strong enough to do that.
So, but at some point, how old was he when he believed that he was the Lord and Master of the little people in his walls?
Perhaps Maria can answer that better than I can, but I'm thinking from early teens on through the time, practically to the time that he killed Lennon.
Oh, really?
He did. He, when he was quite young in his teens, he had these imaginary friends, these little people that he talked to. And I felt like he was talking to himself, an alter ego type situation.
All right.
Because it was always very positive, you know, what he would say to them and the replies that he got. And it wasn't all the time. He would mention it occasionally. But for the most part, he he was very kind, very gentle, always for the underdog.
Very interesting. Well, you know, we're going to take a quick break here, Maria Chip. Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you all for tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Our show this evening is we're exploring the possible connection with a possession of the murderer of John Lennon, Mark David Chapman. We'll be back with more with Chip and Maria right after this.
John Lennon was brought to the emergency room at the Roosevelt site, St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, this evening, shortly before 11 p.m. He was dead on arrival.
And as soon as the word of the shooting was out, carried by radio stations across the city, his admirers started to gather. Their reaction was one of disbelief.
He's not dead. They're just saying that.
You know, the doctor just announced it?
Yes, but I don't care. They're just saying that to get people to leave. He's not dead. John Lennon can't be dead.
John Lennon's friends included a Paul McCartney lookalike.
It froze me. I came last night for basically my own reasons to show support for whatever. It wasn't really morbid curiosity. This morning I think I was here curious to see how everyone else reacted.
Symbolized hope. A new life, a new beginning. He was a great, great, great man.
The vigil has gone on all day, quietly for the most part, for many of the mourners are literally speechless with grief. But the crowds just won't go away. This is Martin Bell in New York.
Well, that, as we heard, was a recount from the original night on December 8th, 1980, when John Lennon was assassinated by Mark David Chapman. Our guests this evening are Chip Coffey, who has written an article for Haunted Times magazine. It's a current issue out, and it should be on newsstands. You can go out and find it. It's a quarterly magazine that comes out. And the article is about the death of John Lennon and the fact that, or belief that Mark David Chapman may have been possessed at the time of his murder of John Lennon. And on the phone with us, we have Maria Simpson, who is a we're covering her name just to protect it, because unfortunately there are still so many fervent fans out there looking to point the blame at somebody, and since they can't get to Mark David Chapman, we certainly don't want any ill things to fall on Maria. So we're talking with Maria, which is not her real name, but Maria is with us this evening talking to us about her friendship and understanding of Mark David Chapman. Now, before we went to the break, Maria, you were talking about his delusions of talking to the little people in the wall. Now, at this point, when he starts talking to you about these things, are you concerned with him being around your family or your kids?
No, surprisingly, I wasn't, because I know that my brother had imaginary playmates when he was a child. And
right, but at this point, Mark David Chapman is a teenager.
That's true. He is. He's older. And I just thought it was his way of talking out his problems with me and with them, to himself, actually.
Now, were these people in the walls at your house, too, for him, or no?
No. He would just tell me about them, and funny. He would make them funny little stories.
Okay.
Make it very humorous, and he would say, oh, well, I talked to them today about such and such. But it was not a big deal. He didn't say much about it, and it didn't seem to have affected him in any way as far as normalcy is concerned. Now, if I look back on it now and am not involved with him as I was then, I might have thought it through a little more.
Oh, it was the 70s and we were all a little bit more laid back then, Maria. We'll give you some understanding for that.
No.
Now, let me ask you, Maria, so how long were you close with Mark David Chapman?
We moved in about 7 years. We left the house, and he had moved to Hawaii.
Okay.
And he gave me an address and told me he was going to live with a Reverend Anderson. And I wrote to him every week at this address, and I never received a reply from him. And so that was actually before we moved. I came home one night to this this house, one we're discussing, and he was sitting on the stoop in the back of the house. And at that time, he had changed drastically.
Now, how long had he been gone for?
Well, golly, let me think here. Maybe a year.
Okay. Now, you're saying he changed drastically. Did he change in appearance, demeanor,
almost.
Both? Okay.
The expression on his face, and just the demeanor, the way he carried himself and the way he spoke was real frightening. And my daughter hid behind me, and my son, too. He was crazy about him also, and they didn't want anything to do with him that night.
One of the things that was mentioned in the article, if I can interject for a second, Dave, is the fact that at this point in time, Mark had tried suicide. He had gone to Hawaii. He had tried suicide. He had become involved with a young woman in Hawaii whose name was Gloria. And interestingly enough, in a twisted sense of homage to Lennon, perhaps Gloria was also of Asian or Japanese, I think she was Japanese as well, ethnicity. He became involved with her. She eventually ended up being his wife. And on this visit that Mark made to the Simpson home, it was very curious that his nickname during the time that the kids worked with him was Nemo, N-E-M-O. And they called him that out of a reference to the Jules Verne novel, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Captain Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria called him, "Oh, Nemo, it's so good to see you." And his reply was, "Don't call me that. Don't ever call me Nemo again." To which Maria said, "Why don't you want to be called Nemo anymore?" And he replied, I'm going to let Maria tell you what he replied.
He says, "Because Nemo means nothing. It means zero." So, okay, well, okay. We won't call you Nemo anymore. But that was just one example of the way he had changed. He was very angry about it.
Now, as I'd heard in previous interviews, now, was this at the time you had somebody with you as well?
I did. I had three small boys who belonged to a celebrity here in Atlanta. And one of them was a junior. And when I introduced the boys to Mark, and he went crazy. He said, "Who would ever name their child this?" And I said, "Because this is his child. This is he's named after his father."
Right.
But he was hysterical. Why in the world would?
And he was bothered that these children were there. Correct.
That's right. He didn't know them, and he all of a sudden there were three extra children, and He was just completely unbalanced that evening.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we go to the break here, Marie, and I'd like you to think about this, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
Okay.
As I heard you mention that on other interviews, and I hear you mention it tonight, I'm just curious. Do you think that maybe Mr. Chapman had something a little more sinister in mind for you and your family when he came there, and when there were more people than he expected, it kind of threw him? Now, I don't want you to answer that now. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All right.
You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guests are Chip Coffey and Maria Simpson, talking about the death of John Lennon and the attachment that Maria had with Mark David Chapman in his younger years. We'll be back with more of this amazing interview right after this.
I hope you're enjoying today's special presentation of Beyond the Darkness, True Crime Tuesday Revisited. This was certainly one that goes down in our memory banks. It's one of the most bizarre and unusual stories, going back to one of the very first years of Darkness Radio. And this story will remind you that the scariest stories are true. We'll be back with more Beyond the Darkness, True Crime Tuesday Revisited, right after this.
For a cop.
And I'll bet your mother had a loud bark.
Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome back to the second half of our show this evening on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Before we went to break, we had an interesting conversation going with Maria Simpson, who is the, she was friends with Mark David Chapman in the early 70s, prior to the murder of John Lennon, and he was a big part of their family. And I left you with a question before we left, that do you feel that, Maria, perhaps Mark David Chapman had maybe not such good ideas for you and your family?
It never occurred to me, Dave. I mean, when you mentioned that, all of a sudden, I thought, hey, maybe so. I was a bit uncomfortable with him because he was certainly not himself that night, and I wanted him to leave, but it never occurred to me that he might do us harm. Because we had never seen anything but kindness in the man.
But this time it was different.
This time was different.
This time this man that the children loved and was such a light to them and such a sponsor and help to them, the children were frightened of him.
They were frightened of him, and I was very uncomfortable. But the thought of him doing physical harm never crossed my mind.
All right. Now, I was just curious if that ever had connected, because it'll also tie in a little bit later in the story to something that I think is interesting. Now, had he, you said that there was really no connection for him that your house was haunted. There was
None
no connection that anything evil had happened in your home.
No.
But yet he was drawn back to you on numerous occasions.
Yes.
Now, you had not, okay, he came back for the one visit. How often did you see him again between then and the death of John Lennon?
I didn't see him at all.
Had you heard from him again?
No, not anything.
Okay.
We did hear, our neighbor next door told us that about the time of Lennon's death, he came and sat in our swing in the backyard all day. And we had moved by then.
And that's what I was just referring to. Now, let me cross that again. He came when back to your home?
About the time he went to New York. He obviously had come from Hawaii. And he came back to our home, and the swing was still there. And he sat in the swing for such a long time. And I've always wondered, if I had been home, would I have been able to have prevented this?
One of the things I'll interject in this, Dave, I think what you're asking is kind of like a time frame. One of the things I will tell you is that the murder actually occurred in December, and in October, Mark went to a gun shop in Honolulu and bought the .38 that he used to kill John Lennon. And quite ironically, the man who sold him the gun at the gun shop's last name was Ono. That's a really weird little connection there. And he boarded a plane for New York just a few days later. But when he arrived in New York, scouting out the Dakota with his evil intent in mind, he found out that he didn't have bullets for the gun, couldn't buy them in New York. So that's when he boarded a plane for Atlanta, sought out a friend who worked as a sheriff's deputy, got the bullets from the sheriff's deputy on the ruse of using them to protect himself. And that was at the time in October, late October or the beginning of November of 1980, that he showed up at the Simpsons' old house. And one of the neighbors reported to Maria that she had seen him for an extended period of time actually sitting in the swing in the backyard at the old house.
Well, was there a new family living there, Maria?
No, not at that time.
So it was just an abandoned house. Did the neighbor notice, was he talking to anybody or staring intently inside the house? What?
They didn't mention anything other than he was just sitting in the swing, and they knew him. They had seen him over there before.
But they didn't approach him to ask him what he was doing there or why he was there?
No, they didn't.
And he was aware that you were gone?
Well, obviously he was.
I mean,
he had been told, certainly. But I don't know what was going through his mind at that time.
So Mark David Chapman, it's now December 8th. He is, he's shown up. He's actually bumped into John Lennon earlier in the day and gotten an autograph from him. There's a photograph of Mark David Chapman standing there after he got an autograph from John Lennon. Right?
That's correct.
Correct on this, Chip? So he's stalking him kind of methodically. Do you think at this point he's trying to get the guts up, or is he waiting for the right moment?
Actually, from what he said in an interview, in a previous interview, was that when John Lennon and Yoko Ono walked out of the house early in the day around, it was around 4 o'clock that John and Yoko walked out of the building where they lived, and Lennon, or Chapman handed John Lennon the copy of Double Fantasy to sign, and Lennon asked him twice, "Is that all you want?" Now, that kind of sounds a little precognitive to me, for Lennon to just ask this man twice, "Is that all you want?" Did he somehow feel that was kind of more than a fan seeking an autograph? And according to what Mark said, the good voices in his head kept telling him, "Go away, just take your album and leave, your autographed album and leave, just go away." But according to him, the voices that were negative inside his head said, "No, stay and finish the job."
Okay, so let me ask you this, and this is where it starts getting kind of woogie for me. All right, so now he's met with John Lennon, and I from what I've read online as well and read in some articles, Lennon also introduced him to Sean, didn't he? During that brief meeting, or was it a different meeting? Are you familiar with that at all?
I don't know if it was this meeting or an earlier meeting.
Okay. I also thought what was really intriguing, you touched on with John Lennon saying twice to him, "Is that all?" John Lennon, you know, they point to the fact that John was pretty obsessed with his own death and believing that it would be a quick, untimely death when it came.
Right.
And for those of you that saw the movie Imagine, we were looking for the video clip or the audio clip to play this evening. There's a scene when he's doing his famous bed-in or sleep-in. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, Chip, but he's reading letters. And one of the letters comes from somebody that claims to have had a psychic premonition that he would be shot to death.
I do remember that.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there does seem to be some kind of precognition going on for John Lennon from an earlier time. So, I mean, that in itself is pretty interesting. Now, we start talking about these thoughts in his head. Now, at what point does Mark David Chapman start to blame it on a possession?
I think I can answer that for you. He said in previous interviews, again, not, of course, we did not personally interview Mark for the article that I wrote, but information that I gathered from previous interviews that he had done, he says that when John and Yoko returned to the Dakota, their apartment building, got out of the limousine and started to walk toward the buildings, his exact words were, "The demons inside his head began screaming over and over, 'Do it, do it, do it,' and that's when he pulled a gun and took the stance and fired the bullets into Lennon." Now, I think the answer to your question is this: in his initial police interviews, that he was subdued without incident. The police actually took him into custody, and during his initial interviews with the police shortly after his arrest, that was the time when he actually told them that two demons that he encountered in the Simpson home commanded him to kill John Lennon.
Okay, so that's where the tie comes in. Now, he claims that the demons were part of her home to begin with.
Actually, what he told the police, and Maria can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, when they said, "Is there anyone you want us to contact for you?" I believe, and again, she can say yes or no, that he said to them, "Contact Maria Simpson. She knows me better than anyone." Is that correct, Maria?
That's correct, yes. Yes.
Okay.
And then later, when he was asked evidently why he did this, that was when he said that these two demonic entities, I guess he called them demons, and he named them that he encountered in her house, in the Simpson house, told him to kill Lennon.
Now, let's not say the names at this point, but he gives two names. They told him what their names were. Was this while they were in him or after they expelled themselves from him?
I will tell you that what I was told and what I have heard, and again, Maria can correct me if I'm wrong, he said two demons named, and he named the two demons, told him to commit the murder.
Okay. Well, now,
evidently, at this point in time, I don't know if he was claiming that he was possessed. I don't know that he ever was possessed or at that point in time if he was possessed or was just oppressed. I don't know. I don't know the technicality there.
Now, on the line with us, we do have demonologist, psychologist, and paranormal investigator Adam Bly. Before I bring Adam on, though, after hearing your interview where you named the two demons, and the reason that we're being reluctant, and I'll ask Adam about this again to mention the names, after the two were named on the radio show that that I heard you interviewed on, and that I heard somebody had contacted the host of that show claiming that the two demons that were listed were in fact from the book The Satanic Bible. So I contacted the Church of Satan to see if they had any connection to these characters and if they could give me any background on the two characters, on the two demons, I should say. And I was issued a quick report back from them claiming, Dear Mr. Schrader, there are no demons listed in the Satanic Bible. Simply, it contains pagan deities who were later called devils by Christians. We do not believe in possession and consider it a psychological illness, an attempt at getting attention or an excuse for ill behavior. They wanted nothing to do with the show or dealing with Mark David Chapman at all, and that they promised me that he had no connections with the Church of Satan whatsoever, never has and never will. Now, with that said, I'd like to bring onto the show with us, if it's fine with you two, demonologist Adam Bly, because I want to get a little bit of insight. Now, Adam, you've been listening to the show. With a lot of the explanation that was going on with Mark David Chapman, with speaking with the little people in the walls, with the delusions that he was having and feeling that he was kind of the lord and master of these little people that lived in his walls well into his teen years, and the great change that seemed to take over him for the year he was gone in Hawaii, and the fact that this family that he seemed to care so much about, he never responded to letters from the mother, Maria, never contacted the children, and then showed up and was so agitated by the fact that there were other children at the site when he got there, and then was also seen in the swing behind her home shortly after, and then is referred to the good voices and bad voices. First of all, do you believe that that is a ripe case for what possession might actually be?
Dave, there's a number of things about that story that don't fit my understanding of possession. And also, part of my background, I worked in forensic psychology in the state prison system for 2.5 years, and I've had many clients who had voices tell them to kill people and, you know, done therapy with them for years and gotten to know them intimately. So there's a number of things about that fit psychosis from the sound of it and do not fit possession. I would ask, though, how old was he when he went away and had this change in personality? Does anybody know?
I can barely hear.
Maria, yeah, I can't.
Yeah, what is the approximate age of Mark David Chapman when he left to go to Hawaii and this big change, this dramatic change took over?
I would have to say when he went to Hawaii, he left in 1977, so he was in his early 20s.
So he was in his early 20s when he left. So maybe 22, 23, and he came back around 23, 24 in that time frame, correct?
He actually was there until just before he killed Lennon, so he was about 24, 25 when he came back from Hawaii.
Okay, so he was in his early 20s, and then he came back from Hawaii to assassinate John Lennon, and he was probably about 25 at that point. Okay.
Right.
Well, and the reason I ask that is because with schizophrenia, which is one possible hypothesis, you can be kind of weird, have delusions, have some hallucinations, and then often in the latter 20s, though it can be earlier, you'll have a full psychotic break where you'll have a dramatic change in the person. They become much more delusional, much more psychotic, and their behavior gets more aberrant. So it could be that at that time that he went away, it was just at that point in the progression of the disease that he became fully psychotic. And that's why that change took place.
So most of the times the full-on psychosis starts to break in the 20s?
Usually later 20s, early 30s.
Later 20s, early 30s, okay.
But it can happen earlier if the person's under stress, and in some cases it just happens earlier.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. So many of the talks that we've heard, for those of you that aren't familiar with Adam Bly, he comes to quite a few of our events, and he's a speaker. Invited speaker, probably one of the more popular speakers we have at the events talking about demonology. One of the things that you've mentioned in there is that a lot of times that the beginning of oppression, I believe you call it, is when they start to give you those little flashes, those moments of, let's kill him, let's do this. And you hear that voice or you see that flash of you shooting John Lennon. Could that have been setting the stage for a possession? Or how do we differentiate in the psychology of it being a mental break and the beginning of possession?
Well, generally, we often see both psychological problems and possession at the same time. The big thing that doesn't fit in the case that you've described here is that there was good voices and bad voices.
In the case of oppression or possession, the person will describe, you know, I'm in here, Adam is still alive, but there's these other things in here too, and those other things do not take on good and bad characteristics, they're always bad. And so when I hear somebody say I've got good voices and bad voices, to me that sounds much more like psychosis as opposed to a spiritual problem.
Or perhaps somebody, I mean, to me, you know, you immediately think of the little Tom and Jerry cartoons with the little devil cat on one shoulder and the angel cat on the other, trying to win over the war of what to do. Could that be more of him just attaching a psychosis to something like that and trying to, you know, give away the reasoning that he did something so heinous?
Yeah, and it could be that he, you know, it sounds like he was mentally disturbed his whole life, period, in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And after the stress and strain of murdering somebody, you know, that would drive any of us a little bit crazy, especially if we, you know, murdered somebody that presumably we had some good feelings towards, or we saw that they had done some interesting things in the world, and we take out this major figure, that would cause a lot of stress and strain. So you have somebody who's already mentally ill under that strain trying to make sense of it all.
Well, Maria, let me ask real quick, Maria, too, at this point, because Adam brings up a good point with the fact that he seemed to have such good feelings for John Lennon. When you first got the news that Mark David Chapman assassinated John Lennon, did you put two and two together that this was the Mark David Chapman that you knew and loved so much?
Not at first.
Okay. Not until they started showing his pictures and...
That's right. Not until I saw it on TV and I saw his picture. I thought it was just, you know, a fairly common name, and it couldn't be the same one.
Now, do you believe, with as much as this man loved John Lennon and the Beatles, do you still have trouble rectifying in your head why he would go ahead and kill John Lennon?
Yes, I do. But I truly believe that what happened in Hawaii when I was not able to reach him is what was the turning point for him, and he had started planning coming back to kill him.
Okay. Now, let's cover real quickly, Adam, here. The idea behind the two names that have been given, it's a good idea not to speak the names of demons out, correct? And can you tell the audience why that is?
Well, in this context, there's two reasons. One, you don't want to give recognition, which is basically a term of, you know, invoking the name of spirits or demons, because you're basically calling them either to yourself or to the location that you're in, and we don't want to be saying those over the airwaves. But two, more importantly, undoubtedly there's some listeners tonight who are interested in demons, might have some misguided ideas about them, and if they heard the names of particular demons, might then go and try to conjure those demons or use those names in rituals, which, if they were real demon names, could lead to them getting hurt.
Now, I did do some heady research on the two names, Chip and Maria, and we were unable to find it. The only references I could find were in Japanese or Russian literature that had anything to do with the name demon and the demonic name that was given. And unfortunately, I couldn't translate the pages to understand what it was, and it may have just been a text error that I wasn't even picking up the real connection of those two words. But from the demonologists we've spoken to, there is no mention of those. Now, Adam, let me ask you this. The demons claimed to have told him who they were. What's your thought on that, of demons giving up that information?
There, as far as I know, a demon would never give up its real name to somebody, because that gives you power over the demon to an extent. Certainly as humans, we don't have any power over demons. But let's say you were in a proper religious exercise of trying to expel a demon. If you had its name, you would have a much greater chance of expelling it. And so a demon will never give up that power to others except under extreme duress. What they do commonly do is give a fake name or claim to be some very mythic, powerful named demon from the Old Testament to sound very important, but they would almost never give their real name. They would give a trickster name.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. Are people that have mentally unbalanced lives, are they a little bit more susceptible to something like an oppression or possession?
That I don't know, because we don't know enough about the way God decides who's going to be allowed to be oppressed and who isn't, and how much culpability somebody who's mentally ill has over their choices. You know, if somebody's got serious mental illness and they choose to invite a demon into their life, does God allow the demon to enter their life? given the person was a little bit crazy and wasn't thinking correctly. I don't know the answer to that. I would say in my experience that a lot of people with serious mental illness can look like they're having supernatural problems and spiritual problems.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Adam, for joining us on The Darkness here, and thank you for sharing your insights. For those of you that are tuning in, you're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Sharing the time with us the last few minutes was Adam Bly. He's a demonologist and a psychologist and a paranormal investigator. And our guests for the evening are Chip Coffey, who's the author of an article in the new Haunted Times issue about the death of John Lennon and the possible possession of John Lennon's murderer, Mark David Chapman. We're also speaking with Maria Simpson, who is a close friend of Mark David Chapman and was one of the few people that Mark wanted to speak to after the death. Well, the reason I wanted to bring a demonologist in is because of the different things that were popped up with giving out names and such like that. And I wanted to see, you know, try to shed some light on if, in fact, demons were in him, would they have given real names? And as we heard from that, most times they don't give that because it's too easy to expel a demon at that point. Now, I'm curious, do you know Chip or Maria possibly at all with his obsession? I mean, you know, there was also another very famous person that's out there, stalker, murderer, who was very obsessed with the Beatles. And do you know, did Mark David Chapman have any connection at all to the Manson family?
Not as far as I know.
No, nor I.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious if that would have played into effect at all as well.
One of the things is that he idolized John Lennon. It was, again, the whole dichotomy of things with Mark. He loved John Lennon, but he was very resentful of the fact that Lennon was becoming a multimillionaire by doing the things that he did, with saying he was a strong proponent of peace and love, and yet he was becoming rich. So Mark resented that fact that Lennon was, on one hand, his hero, and on the other hand, betraying in some way the people by becoming rich in his work.
Okay. So he felt... Now, I remember at the time that this came out, one of the things that they talked about was the possibility that he felt he was John Lennon?
He actually signed his name the last time that he signed out of work in Hawaii.
Right.
He signed out... when he signed his time card, he signed John Lennon and then scratched through it.
Okay. So do you when you talk to him, Maria, now he at this point he's assassinated an icon in American and in English popularity. Did the police contact you when they said, "Oh, you should talk to Maria Simpson. She knows me better than anyone"?
They did call me, yes.
And what was it that they were hoping to glean from you at that point?
Just about vaguely what you have mentioned tonight, what kind of appearance and how was he acting the last time I saw him, which had been quite a while.
Right.
And did I have any idea that he was planning this ghastly deed? But I didn't know. I didn't know. And that was really pretty much all that they wanted to know.
Now, did you find it strange that after all these years of not speaking with you, that you would be the first person he would send the police to kind of attest to his character?
Oh, yes. I've thought that many times because he had two very close friends as well as his parents that I would have thought he would have given them their names. But when he was with me, I saw just one side of him. I saw the kind, gentle.
Well, I wonder if maybe that's why he was sending them to you.
That's right.
So that, because you were the last one to know him in the kind, loving, gentle person that he was.
Exactly.
Now, he just dropped the gun and just stood there waiting, right? And when the police approached him, he just said, "I'm unarmed, please don't hurt me." And he was just taken into custody very simply.
That's right. It's amazing that that he had signed his name, John Lennon. That's really kind. I remember now reading that, but I hadn't thought of that before. Had he lost his own personality and taken on Lennon's, and did he think he was killing someone else at the time? I don't know what he was thinking then. What was going through his mind?
No,
very strange behavior.
Did you, when, now you've spoken to him since his arrest, correct?
Yes.
How many times have you spoken to him?
Twice.
Okay. Now, have you exchanged letters at all or contact with him in
not
that form?
Not up until this time, no. No.
Okay.
I haven't.
When you contacted him or when he talked to you, I take it he was in prison at that point, what did he want to talk to you about? Did he reach out to you or did you reach out to him?
He reached out to me because he called when my children had the same birthday, and he called 2 years on their birthday and chatted about how they were doing and just what you would expect from anyone else. I know they're growing up. How old are they now? And that sort of talk. But from what I understood, that he is very lucid sometimes, and then he is he's not at others.
Now, when you got this call, did you think it was strange to be hearing from him again, reaching out to you? And was when you made this call back to you, did it seem like he was Mark again? He was Nemo.
It seemed like he was Nemo again, and so much of the connection that we had was our mutual love of the children. So it didn't surprise me much that he would pick that day to get back in touch.
One of the interesting things, if I can jump in here again, you ask if he sounded like Nemo at that point. Mark, lots of people have asked, two things I want to put in here is that lots of people have said, well, maybe Mark claimed this so that he could get a not guilty by reason of insanity defense plea.
Right.
And originally, that is exactly what the plea was, not guilty by reason of insanity. He was examined by many psychiatrists who claimed that he was definitely delusional, but the consensus of opinion was that he was competent enough to stand trial. But 2 weeks before the trial was scheduled to start, against his attorney's advice, Mark changed his plea from not guilty by reason of insanity to guilty. So that would sort of...
Now, did you say he did that on his own accord, or did he do that with the advice of the attorney? I'm sorry.
He did that totally against his attorney's advice.
Okay.
One version of why he did this was, there are conflicting reports as to why he made this decision. One says that he did it because God wants me to do it, and another version says that he said, the little voices inside my head told me to plead guilty.
Okay.
So beyond that, fast forward a bit to he's in Attica prison where he's been convicted and given a life sentence because there was no death penalty in New York at the time, and I don't believe there still is. He says that shortly after he was incarcerated at Attica Correctional Institute near Buffalo, that he had a spontaneous sort of exorcism that overcame him, in which the Holy Spirit came down, advised him that there were demons in him, and he said, in Jesus' name, for them all to come out of him, and that several demons came out of his mouth. And in the article, it gives a rather graphic recount of how he describes that exorcism that happened to him at Attica.
Now, Chip, as you're starting to research this and write this article, and with the heaviness of what it is and the possibility that there's demonic involvement, did that bring fear into your life for opening up some kind of Pandora's box?
Absolutely it did.
Okay. Maria, knowing what you know now about Mark David Chapman and about these things that occurred, what is your thought? Do you believe that he is just a mentally sick person, or do you believe that he is, in fact, he was possessed at the time?
If we had not experienced anything outside of him in the house, then I would think that he was possibly just psychotic. But I experienced things on my own, and that's the moving of the objects. The one night, a banging around our house, it sounded as if someone had a sledgehammer and mm-hmm. walked around the house, beating on the house. Things such as that, that I'm more inclined to think that there was an evil entity or two in the house.
Are you afraid opening yourself up again here 26, 27 years later to these conversations and the life that you've escaped with that type of evil entity or evil malevolent force that was going on around you, are you afraid of reopening those wounds again?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, because I have such a positive life, and I believe that, you know, positive attracts positive and negative attracts negative.
That's correct. How about your daughter? Is she still having any type of effect, or has her children or you know, perhaps your son's children felt any strange effects from any of the, you know, has anybody exhibited similar behavior to what happened to your daughter in those years?
My daughter has pretty much tried to put it out of her mind.
Okay.
She doesn't like, I just thought of something I want to tell you, Dave.
Please.
During the time that she was going through this horror, I had a psychic come to the house. This was way into the whole thing, because I finally just decided, you know, we need to get something or someone in here rather than just a doctor. And he came to the house. And I just lost my train of thought. what the heck was I about to say, Jim?
You were going to tell us where all your money was.
I was going to say something about Kathy and something she experienced during that time period.
Well, I'll think about it in a minute, but right now it's gone. It was something important, too.
Well, then it'll come back to us. Yeah, so as we were talking about the fact that, you know, I had wanted to know if she felt that anything is still bothering her, or has anything tried to bother her children here in the future. You said she's just tried to put it out of her mind and doesn't deal with any of that. So do you believe that nothing has followed you from that home in Georgia?
I have always had the ability to see dead people from the time I was small. And I still, of course, do that. But she also can sense paranormal, but it has nothing to do with that house.
How are you not seeing the old man in the house, then? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I mean, how, Chip, do you understand why some people would be able to see him and others wouldn't if they had this ability?
I know that there have been times when I've actually seen an apparition, and some people have that are around, and other sensitives that have been there have not been able to see what we saw. There, you know, if I see it or multiple people see it and then others don't, I don't know. I don't have any rational explanation for that, other than the fact that if there was some sort of oppression going on, maybe it was there solely for the child.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense.
One thing that we can add on to this, and perhaps, you know, the most compelling part of the story that we stress on this topic is, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there, even those people that are in the paranormal, that are saying, okay, what's so compelling about this story? The most compelling part of this is that Mark claimed that two entities that he encountered in this house told him to kill John Lennon, yet he had no knowledge whatsoever about what was going on in this house. So my question becomes, and I think the most compelling question is, if he didn't know what was going on in this house, why on earth or how on earth would he say that he encountered these entities in the house?
Right.
That's the most unexplainable part.
Well, that's why I brought that up earlier, saying that this house seemed to have an attraction to him. And even though he didn't seem to be on the inside track, or let on that he was in the inside track with Maria and her family, and nothing seemed to happen, maybe the reason things weren't happening to your family at that time, Maria, when Mark was there, is maybe they were talking to Mark.
That's a possibility.
And that could have been the, I mean, what do you think on something like that, Chip? Would you pick something up on that, that perhaps maybe that, you know, was more of the reason, not so much religious protection, but maybe the fact that the entity was too busy screwing around with Mark David Chapman to mess with her daughter?
I think it's a great possibility, and we brought up something you very adroitly brought up something in your question, and that is, why did he come back to the house when he came back to get the bullets? Why did he go to that house and sit in the backyard when he knew that the Simpson family had already left that house, that it was a vacant home, and yet he came back and sat for an extended period of time in the swing, in the yard, almost as though he were drawn back to that house, if you will? Did something draw him back to that house? Why did he spend that time in the yard?
Or could it have been something as simple as melancholy of returning to a place when his life was innocent and a little bit more fun and pure, and he felt a sense of love and family and connection, And maybe he was fighting through whatever this quote-unquote demon was in his mind before he made this decision to change and alter the lives of so many people. I mean, that might be another way to look at it as well, is that he went back to the place where he was most comfortable. Because, again, it begs the thought that if the first person that he recommended the police talk to is Maria, there must have been some really good, strong, solid feelings for that family of love and safety that he would consider her the person to contact.
Very compelling point also. Very interesting and compelling point. What was going on in that man's mind, or what may or may not have been influencing him? You know, I don't think neither Maria nor I is here to say that the devil made Chapman kill John Lennon. We just find it incredibly fascinating by what he said compared with what was happening in that house. And that whole story, when woven together, certainly does make you, again, stop and think about possibilities of what can and might very well exist in the world.
Maria, before we go into our final break, I'd like to ask you a question. With the upheaval that this man has put into your life and the challenges and the things that have befallen him and your family as a result of it, have you forgiven Mark David Chapman for all of this?
Oh yes. I have to base my feelings for him on the time we spent together and assume that either these demons or a mental illness caused him to commit the crime. He's still Nemo to me.
That's a beautiful thought. We're going to take a quick break for the final time for this evening. We'll be back to wrap up with Maria Simpson and Chip Coffee. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Hey, everybody. Remember, we're closing in on the end of our campaign for Second Harvest Heartland's Halloween for Hunger. We've only got about a week and a half left, and we need your help to make sure that we hit our goal of $15,000. Second Harvest Heartland helps people right here in the heartland of our country, in America. They help the people that need our help the most. People that are starving within the boundaries of our own country. It doesn't even seem comprehensible, but it's true. This is what you can do to help. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the Halloween for Hunger banner, or email me at dave@darknessradio.com, and I will send you the link. All you have to do is go in and make a donation. Any size donation helps. If you donate just $1, how many times can you say that a $1 donation will actually go to help? Well, it will in this case. $1 will help supply 3 meals for a person in need. So you might be helping to feed one of your neighbors, coworkers, friends, relatives. This is your opportunity to give back. We've talked often about the big hearts of the Army of Darkness Radio. Now's your chance to show it. Every year we do this drive, and it's very important to us. We need to hit that $15,000 mark so we can supply 45,000 meals to our friends, neighbors, and relatives in need right here in the good old United States of America. So please go to darknessradio.com, click on that Halloween for Hunger banner, and make your donation right now. You can make a difference for just as little as $1, but we'll take any size donations, 1, 5, 10, 20, 100, or a gajillion, whatever you've got and you're comfortable with, please go make that donation and be a part of our world and help that out, because it's been such a great part of our show. We know that with your help and all of the people listening across the world, we can hit that goal and shatter it. Last year's goal was shattered. We wanted 5,000. We ended up with 13,800. This year, our goal is 15. Let's hit 15 and blow past that as well. If every one of you listening just donates $1, we will hit that goal in absolutely no time. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure that you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times this just isn't the case. People configure cars online only later to find out that they're not available. So with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. This isn't pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. And this is carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you competitive market pricing. That's right. They have over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and you get to work directly with a TrueCar certified dealer of your choice. And you're likely to enjoy a much faster buying process when they connect you with a TrueCar certified dealer in your area. TrueCar users are saving an average of over $3,000 off the manufacturer's suggested retail price. So please check it out. When you're in the market for a new or previously owned car,
TrueCar has over 3 million cars that have been sold, over 13,000 dealers nationwide, and over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available right now, with that average savings of over $3,000 off the manufacturer's suggested retail price. When you're in the market, make that choice. Go to TrueCar. Some features are not available in every state, but check it out for yourself. We return you now to Beyond the Darkness, True Crime Tuesday Revisited.
I had Sean, and I just knew immediately that it was very important to protect Sean.
Mm-hmm. Should Mark David Chapman be forgiven?
I know that the Pope went to the jail and visited the jail and forgave this person who was trying to assassinate him, something like that. Well, I'm not a pope, and it's very difficult for me to forgive what happened. But I don't even want to think about the person that you mentioned now, and I usually don't, because it's so irrelevant who pulled the trigger. It was... That was not what was relevant. The fact that John's gone is what we're living with.
Imagine there's no heaven.
And that was the words of John Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, as she was asked by a British reporter if there was forgiveness in her heart for Mark David Chapman. This was a... This is one of those points in your life, Chip, don't you agree, where, you know, I mean, people know where they were, they recollect what happened. I mean, I watched the devastation and watched my aunt cry like a child when John Lennon was assassinated. It was like a good friend died. I was a little too young at the time to realize the impact. I mean, I was a huge Beatle fan, but it just, you know, to me, it was just somebody on TV.
I would say that it was, John Lennon is... Look at today. I mean, he's still there. It's some almost three decades later, and you know, John Lennon is still such an amazing force. The Beatles changed the face of music, so their influence is still with us today. I hear, very interestingly enough, I got into the car after pumping gas at a gas station the other day, and switched on the radio and heard the end of "With a Little Help from My Friends." So, you know, and another whole topic is that John Lennon seems to be following me around a bit since I wrote this article. At least I'm hoping it's John and not something else.
Well, I was curious about that, too. And maybe we can ask you to do that while we wrap up here with Maria. You know, being a medium and a psychic yourself, I'm wondering if you've made any connection or if you can reach out and see if there's any message out there that would come through for him. And Maria, I'd like to know from you. As you go forward with this, I mean, you have a beautiful heart that, you know, you're able to forgive somebody that's turned your world upside down so much with the stuff that occurred. And I guess that's going to have an impact on your life and your children's life for as long as they live as well.
That's what I was going to tell you about when I forgot my train of thought.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but my son, my daughter is not married. She has no children, but my son has two children. And he is, he's still very nervous about it when it comes up. He says, I don't want to talk about it. And I think he's still frightened of his sister.
Oh, really?
I really think he is, that perhaps this might happen again. And, because you can just see it in his eyes, that he's never really gotten over it.
That's very curious.
It's very curious, and he also saw an old woman in the house. And he really and truly, Dave, he was terrified because he followed me so closely that if I stopped, he'd bump into me. And he'd sit on the tub while I took a bath, and he really had a hard time in some ways more than Cindy. But we did take pictures of her during one of these episodes. Now, and my husband took it because he is so skeptical. But he took it with a little Brownie camera. Do you remember Brownie cameras?
Oh, sure do, yeah.
And we took a couple of pictures of her in bed, just
sleeping, and then when she begins to get up and she's taking off her pajamas, and then she's on the floor on all fours, like an animal, and the top part of her body is obscured by this dark shape, her head and her shoulders, that were not explainable. I took them to Chuck Wolf at Wolf's Photo, and he didn't have any explanation. He said it wasn't because the film had not advanced properly, that he just did not know.
All right. So he didn't believe that it was just a flaw in the film or in the processing or in the advancement of the film. He just believes that it was just an unknown creation.
Just an unknown, yeah.
I apologize. I have not had a chance to grab the magazine yet, Chip. Are any of those photographs as a part of it?
No. I actually submitted a couple of things that were, Maria was kind enough to give me a photograph of her husband with Mark working in the garden, and we were a little reluctant to publish that photograph as well, although he gave us permission. But none of those pictures appear in association with the article.
You know, maybe if you're okay with it in the future here, Maria, we'd love to see the pictures, and if, you know, we'd either just look at it privately, or if you're willing to share it with our listeners so they could see the photograph of this creature as well, maybe we can get some answers more on what the being might be.
Oh, that would be fine. She was so young, I don't think anyone would be able to recognize her.
One of the things that I may be able to do also is that since I'll be seeing you during the month of March, maybe what I can do is bring them with me when I see you in Colorado.
That would be excellent. And, you know, we've got an author that we work very closely with. Her name is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and she is doing research on creatures known as shadow people. And this may be something of great interest for her as well, Maria. So anything that you would be willing to open up to us to see, and if, you know, if you'd like it just to Tim and I stick with just us seeing it, we'd certainly do that. Or if you'd allow us, we will share it possibly on our website so that people can see the photographs from the from your household and the spirit that it seemed to be attached to your daughter.
Well, I'll have to make sure it's okay with her.
I understand. Well, you just let us know, and we'd be happy to see him. And, you know, I just out of interest for myself because of the, you know, seeing the actual photographs of those type of things are always more compelling to me than you know, you can actually place them with something that you're talking about as well.
They are. The picture's worth a thousand words, and it really is. And this was quite shaking us up. That wasn't correct, but because we didn't expect to see anything.
Right. Did you ever record her to get the voices that were coming from her?
No, we didn't.
Now, were the voices ever not hers? Did they sound more animalistic? Did they sound more male? Did they sound...
No, it was always her voice.
Okay.
There was no other voice came through.
All right.
But it was just her words that she used and the fear in her voice that really, really worried us. Well, when we took these pictures, we absolutely didn't expect to see anything. At least my husband didn't, and he really was quite shocked when he saw them.
Did that help him become a believer of this?
It helped him open up a little bit more.
All right.
Just a little bit. He says, and this is always what he always says, I don't want to look at it. I don't believe in it. I don't want to talk about it. So.
And this many years later, is he still of the same mindset?
Pretty much.
All right.
Pretty much. He occasionally will say, "What do you think really happened at the old house?" And I'll tell him.
So he does still have an interest and an intrigue. It's there, but it just is. It sounds like most men, we, you know, those things that we don't understand and we can't protect our family from, we almost would rather ignore that they were ever there or existed.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you say protect the family.
Right.
I think the fact that we were all quite upset, and Cindy more so, because her life was just changed so drastically, and he couldn't do anything about it.
And also from the standpoint that there are so many things that even that I've experienced that I find it really hard to wrap my brain around. And it really, things like this stretch your belief system so far for things that rock your world or throw you completely out of balance by what you perceive your reality to be. I mean, your whole world is actually turned upside down when these sort of things enter into your world, and it's just so hard to even fathom or bring yourself to a point of acceptance that this may be in existence.
Right, because if you have to admit that this is out there, that's crazy. I mean, how do you wrap your head around? As you and I know, Chip, we've seen things in the paranormal investigations that you want the answers, you want it, and once you see it, it leaves you at this point of holy beep, what did I just see, and how can I even begin to process what's just happened to me?
And even more so when you start dealing with anything that's dark or negative.
Right. Definitely.
I mean, it just multiply that feeling with seeing a garden variety type ghost times a thousand or a million or a gazillion when it comes to dealing with anything that's a negative or a non-human entity. I mean, it really does stretch your belief system and your whole sense of reality.
Now, Maria, has the family that bought the house after you, are they still occupying that home?
They are. They're still there. I have been by several times to try to talk to them about what had happened since we moved out, but as I said, he's not willing to talk about it.
Well, Maria, and I'll ask you this and see if it would be something you'd have an interest in the future. If you would be interested in passing on the address to Tim or I, we would never release where the actual house is or give any personal information, but just to contact to see what kind of research we could do on the history of the house and the property to go a little further, that maybe we can help shed some light for you in the future on what happened there and maybe who those spirits were or, you know, what that property may have been at one point that would make it understandable to you and your family what occurred. And then maybe there can be some closure.
I'll have to think about that one, Dave.
Right.
I don't want this family brought in.
Oh, no, it would not. I didn't mean in contacting them directly, but there's a way to go through town records and everything to find out the history of the home, and by researching newspapers from the eras that, you know, preceded you owning the home to see if there was any news stories, murders, deaths, suicides, any, you know, land purchase deeds that might make it a little bit more understandable. And a lot of times the older archives actually hold photographs of the families that own the property, and perhaps we can stumble upon photographs of an old man or an old woman that your family might understand who they were dealing with.
That would be very interesting.
Okay. Well, you kick it around and decide if that's something that would be a good fit for you, because we'd certainly like to do our bit to try to help you get some closure. And we wouldn't do it on the radio show unless that's something you wanted to do in the future. But then perhaps we can at least help you and your family get a little bit more understanding on what happened or what may have happened in your lives.
Very well. I'll think about it. And you have my number, and you know how to get in touch with me.
That's right, Maria. And thank you very much for spending your time with us this evening. And, Chip, before we head out, we have about a minute left here on the show. Do you get any sense from John Lennon about what's happened and with the hubbub that was, you know, surrounded his death and subsequent legend that's grown from it?
Interestingly enough, everywhere I would go after I started delving into this article, there would be things Lennon around me, photographs, people wearing T-shirts, people doing projects at colleges where I would go. So it almost appeared as though he was trying to send me a signal that I really do feel from a psychic standpoint that Lennon is very much still present, and he is still a spirit for the good. And I feel like he's happy that finally somebody's bringing some sense of clarity to what's going on with this case, or opening it up again. And quite honestly, I think John Lennon's happy that he's being remembered and happy that his name is still being spoken and that there are people that still revere and idolize him.
Right,
I think maybe his ego takes over a little bit.
27 years later, and I mean, a lot of people still feel the pain as though it happened yesterday. That's an amazing impression.
He certainly changed the face of music and the face of the world.
Chip, thank you very much, and thank you for bringing Maria onto the show with us this evening. We also want to thank demonologist Adam Bly for joining us. Chip and Maria, God bless, and hope you both have a safe night, and thank you for spending your time with us here.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much, Dave.
We hope you've enjoyed today's special edition of Beyond the Darkness True Crime Tuesday Revisited. Remember, you can hear brand new episodes of True Crime Tuesday delivered to you every Tuesday by signing up. Go to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, or you can send me an email at dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll send you a link to the banner so that way you can go in and subscribe. It's only $5 a month. That gives you 4 brand new 90 to 120 minute episodes of the best in true crime talk radio. Plus, you get some I Knew a Murderer, you get some Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, and more. So check it out now. Don't wait any longer. It's time to subscribe to the best in true crime talk radio from the people that bring you the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.